And so, with a little bit of this in mind, as Brother Ken had read to us in James 4, we know this passage. This is not a passage that is so strange and weird to us. I do think it's interesting, though, that we think the perspective of them having, you know, this idea that, you know, life is frail and fragile and, you know, it's like a wisp of smoke. You see it and then it's just gone. James is reminding people 2,000 years ago, and he's reminding us today. I think it's the same general attitude that we have of we're in control. I know for the last few years, it's been hard for most everybody. I mean, I know, you know, 1 or 2 years has been hard for everybody, and then someone says, well, you know, 2022 wasn't so bad. Well, my 2022 wasn't great, but, you know, survived it. We've lived to tell the tale and all. Have no idea what 23 is going to come up with. I know every single year we start off this way. We think of what's ahead of us, and we don't know what's going on. Thankfully, we don't. If God told us every year, hey, this year this is going to happen, we'd probably argue most of the time, wouldn't we, that nope, that's not going to happen. How in the world could that happen? But it happens. With everything, whether it's a good thing that we look out on or bad, that's the point of what God is telling us, is he's there for us. Psalm 23:4 is where David says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. And that should be our attitude, no matter what it is that comes, no matter how hard it is, what it is that comes, God is there to help us through it all. And so the passage that was read in James 4, he says, come now you who say, which we think, people back then, did they say things like this? Obviously they did. It's the same disposition people have today. This is what's going to happen. I've known people like this where it's like they make a plan and they're the sort of people it always seems to come to pass the way they planned. I don't know how that works. I can make a plan. It's just a joke, really. I mean, who knows what's going to happen. But James is talking about that human confidence that we can have where we're going to do this. We're going to go. We're going to spend money. And we're going to make money. That's the whole point. We're going to make a profit. And yet, James reminds us all, you don't even know what your life is going to be like tomorrow. We're so worried about June and July and August and next December and whatever. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You're a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. And how many of us, when we were young, had some old soul that would come to us and say, oh, you just don't know. This is the best time of your life, being young. Mark Twain would say something like, the problem with youth is it's wasted on the young. You know, when you finally figure things out in life, it's when you're too old to do it all, you know. The bottom line is, this is just the way it is. It's always been this way. It's not a big surprise. Although, I will say, the older I get, the more interesting it seems that I hear those old voices that told me things like, you just wait till you get old, and this is going to happen, and this is going to happen, and in a blink of an eye, this. When we started having kids, I mean, I know people were telling us, oh, in a blink of an eye, she's going to be driving and married, and we're laughing, like, yeah, that's you, not me. Well, now I'm telling people, when they have new babies, guess what's going to happen, you know, in a blink of an eye, and all that. It's a cycle. We know it, and it's not like this is something that someone has gotten by us that we just didn't see it coming, because we all see it coming. And I know, every one of us, we have plans for 23. It's just life. They already have made plans for this year, this last year or two. You know, this is what's going to happen. This is the year this happens. And it might happen, and it might not. But either way, the attitude we're supposed to have, which I know what happens is we get pretty confident in things, and we think, I don't really need God in this. God doesn't have to be a part of this. I'm okay. I don't know how I've made it this far on my own, but I've made it this far on my own, which is foolish thinking. We've not made it this far on our own in any regard at all. So James says, you need to think about your life. It's a vapor. It appears for a little while. It vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say. And it's not about the logistics of saying these words. These words are not some sort of a magic thing that if you say those words, that's all it is. You just say it. If the Lord wills. I'll be honest with you, as a preacher, I don't know why. I don't know if it's a training thing, you know, where somebody says you need to say if the Lord wills. I say it probably more often than a lot of other people, just because as a preacher you feel like you got to say it, I guess. I don't know. But it's a mental attitude, really. If you don't ever say those words out loud, if you think it in your heart, that's right. It may be you don't ever think it in yourself, but you say it out loud. That may not necessarily be right, you know? It's an attitude of, I'm not in control. It's an attitude of, I'm not God. It's an attitude of, I'm along for the ride, really. I don't know how this ride's going to go. I'm in control of so little. A friend of mine is a psychiatrist from way long time ago, and he and I were doing some fishing. I was going through a tough time. And we went fishing, and we stood there, and for a while he said nothing, and then he finally said, you know, you're not in control of, like, anything. It's not what I wanted to hear at all. And he goes, there's literally nothing you control. He says, even when you're driving down the road, what is between you and the guy that's in the lane next to you? There's 4 feet in some yellow line or a white line. You don't know what's going to happen. He may fall asleep at the wheel, and you may end up dead. Thanks, Bart. Appreciate this. But he was right. I didn't learn the lesson then, by the way. I heard those words and fought them pretty hard. I don't know if I've even still learned that lesson, how much I'm just not in control. I've learned it more so this year, I'll tell you that. I'm not in control. And James comes to the conclusion, as you see there toward the bottom, after he says, if the Lord wills, we'll live and do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. That's the whole gist of it. When you say things like, we're going to do this, we're going to go to this city, we're going to spend a year there, we're going to engage in business and make a profit, that's an arrogant statement because you don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. James isn't making this complicated. This isn't hard. You don't have to have some sort of a degree to go, what is he saying here? We know what he's saying. You have no control of things. And so you need to let go and let God. And that doesn't mean it's all going to be easy. Let's talk to Job for a little while. Can you imagine Job in the year before he had everything happen for him? He lost his whole family, basically. And if you think about it, even though the story ends up good, you know, he ends up with even more beautiful daughters and even, you know, handsomer sons and everything's great. His wealth comes back to him much more than he ever had before. I don't know that Job would have signed up for what he went through to get to that point. I mean, really, I don't know. The boasting of the thing, that's the problem. It's the boasting and saying this is what's going to happen when we just don't know. And so James' conclusion is a good conclusion. It's an easy conclusion. It's one I think we each need is, if you know the right thing to do and you don't do it, to you, it's sin. It's not a mistake. He says it is a sin. It's a crime against God. I know sometimes we don't think of sin the way we should. We think of sin as mistakes. Maybe they're heavier mistakes than just normal sort of put the wrong color socks on or wore the wrong shoes, you know. Have you ever done that? I've always... And I do this. I'm a weirdo about this. I see a policeman. I wonder if he's on duty or not. And I look at his shoes. And the reason, it's not like I can always figure it out, but you can tell sometimes if a guy's a policeman, if he's a detective, because he's wearing dress shoes compared to, you know, the combat boots some of the guys wear, because, you know, they don't know what they're going to face today. They don't know if they're going to be running. They don't know what. So they wear shoes to fit that day. They just don't know. That's the attitude, though, that we need to have is we need to have a spiritual, mental attitude of whatever happens today, it is God who is in control, and I depend on Him, more so than Him depending on me. It's me depending on Him. Again, He's God. We're not. And I know academically, if we had some sort of a test to take, and there was one of those questions, who is God? We'd be just, well, I'm not. And yet sometimes we continue acting as if we are, like we're in control. I think one of the hardest lessons of life, and it may be, you can debate with me later, I think for me at least, the way I look at things, the hardest thing about life is patience. And I don't think it's the only thing that's hard, but patience is a hard thing. It's waiting on things that are outside of what I can control. I control very little. We were talking this morning about going to a doctor's office, and they're always late. Doesn't matter if you're the first appointment of the day, they're late. Can you imagine being the last appointment of the day? Yeah, I've had that happen a couple times where I go to my cardiologist, I'm the last appointment of the day. I know it because they told me before, you're the last appointment of the day. Why are you telling me that? I don't know. I don't know if you're telling me that because that means it's going to be an elastic hour. I've always wondered. And I go and I wait like I wait before. They're pretty good. I mean, you may wait 15 minutes and that's about it. But still, there's a waiting. And then you get there. You do all the things you're supposed to do and you're still, it's just not in control. It's a matter of perspective, ultimately. God's in control. We know it. But are we willing to just let Him do this? Let me say this. I don't know if this is the perfect illustration. I don't know how many of you have been flying. And I don't mean flying like you're sitting there being flown. I mean flying where you're in control of the plane. How many of y'all have done that? I expect some. I mean, it's just the way it goes. I've done it a few times, not where I've taken off and flown. I had a friend up in North Florida that he had a little two-seat Cessna. And we would get up, and then he would let go of the controls and say, hey, you want to have at it? That was pretty easy stuff because you didn't look at anything outside the plane. Everything was inside the plane. You're looking and making sure lines meet up. And it was a little stressful after a few minutes, especially when he grabbed the controls and made us go to the hard right. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, well, I just want to see how you're going to react. He saw how I reacted. I went, what are you doing? You know? And then you balance the whole thing out. It's great. And then he's like, okay, let me land the plane. Yes, please. I'd like to live. He did it for me primarily to say, look, I have a heart condition. What if I died up here while we're flying around? Like, well, I'm going to die too. I don't know what else to tell you. I don't know how to do this. How many of us would get on a commercial airline? Because we've all probably flown, you know, most of us have. I've never seen it happen where we're all walking in to the plane and then somebody goes, look, I need to talk to the pilot. I really need to know whether or not he has a clue what he's doing. If I'm a passenger, I'm like, you don't really need to be asking the pilot that. I'm sure he's fine. That would make me nervous for somebody to demand to talk to the pilot. I'm sure there's somebody in the course of life who has done that, where they need to talk to the pilot. That's the way it is. James is telling us we should not be that way, where we're going to say this is what it is, when we have really no idea. We're not the pilot. We're not God. That's the point. That's the point I'm trying to make. It's not an academically new point. You haven't thought about that before. You have. The thing is, I know we want to be in control, but I'm glad that we're not, because if we're in control, you think things are a mess now. How much messier they really could get. I do think of Job's demands and God's answers to his demands, because we have a better perspective than Job. We don't know everything, but we know more than Job did. Job never was told why all this happened. Job doesn't know about Satan and God saying, what are you doing, Satan? And he's like, I've been roaming around just trying to find something to do. And God's like, have you thought about Job? He's a good man. And that whole thing started because God brought him up. God brought Job up. It's not Satan saying, I've been looking at Job. His life is a good life. Let me at him and I'll take care of that. It's God who says, what are you doing? I haven't been doing anything. Have you thought about my servant Job? I haven't, actually. Now that I am thinking about him, let me at him. All right, you can go. Instead, in the last few chapters of Job, God finally does speak to Job. But he never addresses one thing about what Job's asked, which is, why did this happen? And the answer basically is, Job, I'm God, you're not. Were you there when I created light? Were you there when I created the animals? Are you there when the goats do this, when the camels do that? I mean, do you know anything? I mean, really, that's kind of the essence of God's argument to Job, is do you know anything? And in the end, in chapter 42, Job repents. He's like, I should not have said anything. This is a personal question you have to ask and answer on your own, but how many of us have gone through maybe a tough year and you're mad at God? It might be that you are. You're upset with Him. Things didn't go the way you wanted them to. Maybe you made plans and they just didn't work out at all. Or the plans that you thought you saw coming, just, you know, it was topsy-turvy. It's like modern art. Have you seen the guys where they I mean, this actually has happened recently. They have modern art. You look at it, you don't know which way's up. Is that up? Is this up? And I had read an article where a guy had put an article, not put an article, he had put a painting. It had been bought for thousands of dollars. And it was put in a very famous, wonderful place. And people paid money to go look at it. And the guy who painted the painting, it was very impressionistic and very weird. And I remember looking at it thinking, I don't even know which side's up. Guess what? The people who put it up didn't know either. And he himself went to the museum and looked at it and said, you've had it upside down these 30 years. And I'm sure they wanted to move it, but he's like, don't, because the paint has pulled and gravitated. You can't move it. It'll redo the... It's hilarious thinking about. I think sometimes that's what life is. We think we know what we're doing, and we put it up, and then God says, nope, it's upside down completely. It's upside down. Commentary that I've used on Ecclesiastes is written by a man named Kent Hughes, and he says, it is said that long ago when an Eastern emperor was crowned at Constantinople, the royal mason would set before his majesty a certain number of marble slabs. One he was to choose then and there was his tombstone. The ancients thought it was wise for him to remember his funeral at the time of his elevation, for his life would not last forever. Wouldn't that be something? You become king, and this guy comes in and goes, yeah, we're here to choose your tombstone. How does that go over? Well, it is a very humbling thought, but I think it's a good thought. I don't know if this is accurate or not, but it could be. It doesn't seem like a super surprise sort of thing to happen. What we have in the Bible is like Galatians 6, verses 7 through 9, where Paul says, don't be deceived. God cannot be mocked. Whatever one sows, he will reap. The one who sows to his flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. And let us not grow weary while doing good, or of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. That's kind of the key. I mean, that's what James is saying in James 4:17. If you know the right thing to do, then do it. If you don't do it, it is sin against God. It is a crime to know the right thing and think, I can put it off. I'm not going to do that. I'll put it off. I don't know how many of us have regrets in life, you know, where we look back and we say, should have done that differently, or should have said that differently, should have not said this, should have just whatever. We can't go back. We don't drive forward in our cars looking at the rearview mirror the entire time. I know we sometimes think we might be able to do that. You really can't. You can look a lot, but if you're driving your entire life forward by looking backward, you're going to have a wreck. It's a simple, simple thing. Actually, one of the things I learned when I was learning to ride a motorcycle was object fixation. It's the one thing they train you. Do not look at everything, because you look at the things, that's where you're going to go. One of the funniest wrecks, I say a wreck, I mean, it did happen. I was learning to ride at a big Indian, that 800-pound behemoth motorcycle. And I was crossing the road. This was when we lived in North Florida, and I was learning to ride, and all I could see was the stop sign. And I stared at the stop sign. You know what I hit? The stop sign. And I hit it. I mean, it wasn't a near miss. It was a direct hit. The road was out there. Why did I look at the road? Because I was looking at that stop sign for whatever reason, and I stared at it and ran right into it. And that's object fixation. That's what happens. And sometimes that's what happens. We're looking back so much that we just don't look forward, don't go forward. In life, we've got to remember God's in control. He can, and He does take care of everything. We need to submit. We need to humble ourselves before Him. And sometimes if we really don't for a while, He'll humble us. That's when we need to learn those lessons. And we know, academically, Hebrews 9:27, it is appointed for man to die once, and then comes judgment. This is life, and it's always been life since the time of Adam. You can go in the book of Genesis and start chapter 5. Everybody who's mentioned living is dead by the end of that chapter. This person lived 969 years, and he died. This person lived 893 years and he died. And they had really long lives, but they all died. And we're like, we know this happens. That's what James is saying. Don't you see? Your life isn't what you think it is, and you're not the captain of your own destiny and all that. If you know the right thing to do, you need to do it. And that's what he's saying. And that's what he's teaching us. I know there's some who think, I need to be baptized. I know I need to be baptized, but I'll put it off. I mean, I got this year, right? I mean, I made it through this last one. The perspective is, we don't have a whole year ahead of us. I've always thought it funny when people like, we've come to a new year. Like, we really have the whole year set out in front of us, and we know it. We don't know it. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. That's the point James is making. But we honestly, the Lord may come tomorrow. He may come this afternoon. He may come in August. If we knew, we would hopefully be ready. Knowing how we are, though, we'd probably put it off till... If we knew he was coming like on August 31st, you know what we would do? We'd get ready on August 30th, right? No, I'd wait till the 31st. Why not, you know? I mean, that's the way we are. We just wait till you have to do something. That's what James is trying to get us to do, is not wait till we have to. Is to do it with an understanding. If the Lord wills, we'll live and do this or that. Jeremiah says in Jeremiah 10, 23, 24, I know, O Lord, that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. He's not in control. That's what Jeremiah is saying. But then verse 24 goes right into it. Correct me, O Lord, in justice, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. Because God can do that. He could bring us to nothing. And so what we're coming to, I think, hopefully, is daily bread thinking. This is what Jesus said in Matthew 6, verse 11. Give us this day our daily bread. Only scholars and preachers can make this difficult. I was reading this, Matthew 6, you know, and I was like, this is what the point I want to make is the daily bread thinking. We got to think about today. God will take care of today. Technically, this is the weird thing. Scholars say that the phrasing here is very challenging, and that's what the way they I read a few different commentaries. They all said the same thing, that the Greek here seems to be an idiom from Aramaic, which is hard to translate. And so it's a weird translation, but it comes down to this, that literally it means give us this day tomorrow's bread. That doesn't make sense. So that's why most English translator guys have said, give us this day our daily bread, not tomorrow's bread. But that's kind of the literal point. And maybe in Aramaic it was said a little differently, but I'm like, even something like this, we've got to make difficult. How? Give us today's bread. I don't know how many of y'all work on menus, you know, where you kind of think, all right, so Monday it'll be this, Tuesday it'll be that. If you do that, I don't know how you do that exactly. I mean, we kind of do that though, don't we? My grandfather was the sort, he didn't really think about the menu of what he was going to be eating through the week. It would be what his desserts would be. And I'm not kidding. He liked ice cream very much. So he'd be the sort, well, I could have vanilla on Monday, and then Tuesday I'll probably finish the vanilla so then I could start on the chocolate. And that's how he was. He set the week according to his desserts. And every once in a while it would be thrown off. He's like, man, today's vanilla day. You know, it's not chocolate. Okay, that's just weird. Who cares? You know, let's eat dessert first anyway. But daily bread thinking, it's a mentality. Let's turn together and read in Matthew 6, the same context, by the way, that we find the daily bread thinking that Jesus says, give us this day our daily bread, is Matthew 6, 19. And reading on through to the end of the chapter where he urges us not to worry because tomorrow's going to have its own problems. Today's got its own problems. So let's start Matthew 6, 19. And again, as he's talking to us about all these things, he's emphasizing laying up treasures on earth. That's what James is kind of saying in James 4, 13. Come now, you who say today or tomorrow, we're going to go to such and such a city, we're going to spend a year there, we're going to engage in business and make a profit. And now Jesus is saying, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves don't break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. That's the problem James is addressing. People whose heart is stuck here. They're not thinking if the Lord wills, because they're not thinking spiritually at all, you know, at all. The eye is the lamp. And he says the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eye is healthy, your whole body is going to be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body is going to be full of darkness. And if then the light in you is actually darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters. He'll either hate the one, love the other, or he's going to be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Therefore, I tell you, don't be anxious about your life. Right after he says, don't worry, or right after he says that you can't serve two masters, he says, don't worry about your life. If we're worried about our life, I think it's because we're trying to serve two masters, God and money. I mean, how many of us have started January 1st thinking about money? And it's the world we live in. Everybody's thinking about what they've lost this last year. And, you know, I read stories of businessmen who had millions of dollars, who've lost millions of dollars. I don't know how that happens. You know, it's the same sort of story, though. People are going to live in accordance to their Lord, their God. You can't serve two masters. He doesn't say it's tough to do. He says you cannot do that. And yet we try to do that. So if we're stuck in anxiety, it might be because we're trying to serve two masters. That's what I'm trying to say here. Look at it, verse 24-25. So I tell you, therefore, don't be anxious about your life, what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, about your body, what you're going to wear. Is not life more than food? Is your body not more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, which if they did, we'd all think that's so weird, because that's just not what they ever do. And yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of much more value than they? Which of you, being anxious, is going to add a single hour to his lifespan? I mean, we learn as people study these things that actually that kind of stress shortens your life. It doesn't extend it at all. Why are you anxious, in verse 28, about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field and how they grow. They don't toil or spin. And yet I tell you, even Solomon, in all his glory, was not arrayed like one of these. You've got to go back to 1 Kings and read what all he wore. It's amazing some of the things that he would wear and how it's described. He, obviously being the wealthiest of all the Israelite kings, I mean, you look at what he wore, and God is telling us through Jesus, the lilies of the field aren't even clothed the way Solomon. I mean, in other words, I stated it backwards. Solomon wasn't wearing what they were. They were clothed better. So in verse 30, if God so clothes the grass of the field, which not green grass, we're thinking here like wheat, which today is alive and then tomorrow is thrown into the oven to be made into bread, is he not much more going to clothe you a little faith? Therefore, don't be anxious, saying, what are we going to eat? What are we going to drink? What are we going to wear? The Gentiles seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows you need them. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Therefore, don't be anxious. This is the third time, by the way. Maybe the third time's the charm. Therefore, don't be anxious about tomorrow. Tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. And again, I think there's nothing that we've mentioned this morning in our readings that is new to us. We haven't thought these thoughts before. We have. Problem is, we need to be reminded of them, because we live in a world that thinks it's in control of everything. It is hilarious to me that there are scientists who really do believe we can control the weather. And they're working on it. They're working on solutions to hurricanes. They've been around since probably forever, right? I don't see how that's going to happen, but I was reading in Norway, they've got scientists who are trying to fill the clouds with certain substances to affect, this is the thought, they're going to fill the clouds with certain things, like a little extra sodium. I'm using that as an example. And they're going to fill it up a little bit heavier than it should be to see if they disperse easier and quicker over the Atlantic Ocean, so they don't become these Cape Verde storms and become these hurricanes. Okay, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, but okay. I mean, more power to you, I guess. It's just, in some ways to me, it's the hubris of man. We think we can do all of it. We can just do anything. put our mind to it, we can do it all. One thing I've been thinking about is how this last couple few years, I know the COVID years and all, we've learned as a society, as a world basically, we're just not in control of much of anything, right? I mean, the world basically came to a halt, a stop. And now, you know, it's kind of picking back up. A friend of mine was looking for a part for his car. And we've come across this with car parts, motorcycle parts. It's hard to find because of COVID. That's what they're still saying. You know, for a couple years there wasn't anywhere near the manufacturing that was done. And so if you need a part that you thought was easy to find, it may be another 2 years for you to find that part. Sounds crazy. Who thought in modern times we'd be dealing with this kind of thing? Yeah, it is what it is. It just shows that's life. You know, in God's time with Israel, what did he give them? To teach them daily bread thinking? I mean, he literally gave them daily bread called manna. He didn't call it manna. They called it manna. They call it manna because the meaning of the term manna is, what is this? So what are we having for dinner today? What is this? That's what we had yesterday. That's what we had for the last 35 years. We're still having it because that's what he's providing. Manna. And the important idea of God providing for our necessities, they had all the food they needed. Of course, they complained about that, and God finally gave them what they wanted and killed them through it, but it's because they didn't trust God. We need to have that daily bread thinking where God will provide today what we need, and we're going to be thankful for it, happy about it. Isaiah reminds us in Isaiah 55, 9 through 11, as the heavens are higher than the earth. What? Why does God have a better perspective? It's not just physical thinking of how high he might be up and he can see it all, but it helps to think in that way. The heavens are higher than the earth. My ways are higher than your ways. My thoughts than your thoughts. Is the rain and the snow, they come down from heaven and don't go right back there. They water the earth. They make it bring forth and sprout. They give seed to the sower, bread to the eater. He says, that's how my word shall be that goes out from my mouth. It shall not return to me empty. It will accomplish that which I purpose and succeed in the thing for which I sent it. God's word isn't just going out and coming right back. As the rain doesn't just fall into the earth and go right back to the heavens. There's a whole process we don't even really think about, really. That's God's word. His ways and his thoughts are higher than ours. So again, James says, if the Lord wills, that's our attitude. It depends on God's providence, his perfect care of everything, because he is God. Again, David said in Psalm 23, 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Surely goodness, verse 6, excuse me, and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. David's attitude was, God will take care of everything. Even when I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'm not going to fear evil because God is with me. And so as we close, excuse me, it's a couple weeks in a row, I've come to a point, it's just like, throat's done. Jesus said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I've commanded you. I think often I myself kind of skip verse 20. But I think it ties in perfectly with what we've been talking about this morning, because verse 20 closes as Jesus says to the apostles, behold, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. They needed to know that. And just like James was starting off this whole lesson, this idea of if the Lord wills, God is with us. He is protecting us. He is our salvation. And so this morning, maybe you are thinking about being baptized. This would be the perfect opportunity for you to do that, not to put it off anymore, but to think about what he wants you to do now. And if, as a Christian, you're not living the way you know you should, excuse me, this again is the perfect time for you to come forward as we stand and sing.